This is Sean Torres from Killsboro Brewing Company, and you're listening to Steal This Beer.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
Alright, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Friday and we are stealing beer. It is actually 5 o'clock on Friday, so I don't think you'd correct me, but Hall is currently pathing. He'll show up somewhere mid-episode, but luckily enough, the genius Ambassara, who you've heard on the show before, is in Treadwell Park tonight, so we made her stop pouring beer and change kegs and jump on to sit in the Hall seat so I'm not being boring. Justin is Justining.
Hey, what's up?
With the efficiency of only Justin.
Augie's talking with the efficiency.
That's true.
I'm just happy to have you guys here.
I'm happy to be here.
I'll say the nice thing.
I missed a show here, which was the first show I missed.
No, we weren't here. We were at Barcade.
Even better. So yep. I haven't missed a show here, but we've recorded our first show at Treadwell, and I had such a good time. We shotgun beers. We were drinking giant fucking flagons of beer, and Augie got himself in some Augie trouble. It was a very good episode. But needless to say, the next Monday I missed an episode, so maybe I'll learn that lesson. I won't. Anyway, thank you for having us. Thanks for being here, and thanks for hauling till Hall shows. We have Becerra things to discuss as well. But in the meantime, let's talk to Chris McClellan, who is the official accomplice du jour.
Hello.
How are you, Chris?
Hi.
So Justin, in his deep research, including me, and wrote you as the founder of Brew Enthusiast, which is a... Call it a blog?
It's a written language website. It does. It's in English. It has articles. It has opinions. It has thoughts. It has interviews. But we can definitely call it a blog for sure.
You started it in
2013.
And you haven't written much since the summer.
No. So
I went on to do some what the fuck is Chris saying about beers right now. July.
We still put out a weekly newsletter, which is just kind of like here's my distillation of the world's beer news.
Oh, neat. Subscriber service like MailChimp or something.
Yeah. So just kind of get into it a little bit, understand the some of the top stories of the week. There's a lot of beer news that's going on. In the meantime, we're also trying to put together some other fun little projects on the side, and I also in my day job I work as a senior ambassador for Guinness as well. So that's kind of what I'm rolling with in the interim, which is hence the lack of articles.
All right, so interesting. Obviously, the place we need to get in conversation with you, or at least start, is marketing, since that seems to be both. And at some point, we will address. If there is conflict, if there isn't conflict, what is of being a guy with a full-time job for Diageo / guy who writes for publications? We can do that. And we've done that before with other people in a similar situation. But for now, I'm much more interested in, because I read your bio on the site, you started that in 13. You have a marketing background.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the Guinness job in 15.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this seems to be a path of a certain type of guy we're discovering on the show as I learn more about these different things. And I'm wondering, so Justin, put your cans on because I need to ask you a question.
Put your cans on?
Yeah, these things.
These are cans.
Headphones.
Okay. So Justin,
nice cans, Justin.
I'm talking about people that come from a marketing background to beer through blogging into partnerships with brewing.
Like Chris?
Exactly, but there's somebody else that does it. Who have we had on the show that did that?
I don't know.
One of the websites has a Bud deal or an October deal or a Zed deal or something, and he also consults breweries and he also writes
Ethan?
A blog.
Ethan Fixel, maybe, but he's, they shut that down. The Beer Necessities is no longer around.
Anyway, whatever it was, but I'm saying that's a path.
Yep.
And I'm much more interested in if there's a brain type, if there's a model type, if there's an education type that says, all right, I do marketing, I'm interested enough in beer to write a weekly post-thought piece on it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, people like what I'm thinking about this, maybe I can sell that. Hey, I've sold that into now I work for Guinness. And I'm more interested right now in the creative / realistic / brain, since that is a established enough path that we can't remember the other people that do it.
Right.
So at least two people have done it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And
think about that. Just talk me through that. What were you doing in 13 that made you start a beer blog? How did that turn into a consultancy for small breweries? And then how did that become the Guinness job? And then what's become of that original passion? Because I was a blogger at one point. Uh-huh. I did stop writing at some point in July one year where I was just like, all right, I've got that system out of my system.
That's a huge question.
All right. But we have an hour. Beer? We have an hour.
Classic Carton question.
Is there enough beer at this table to get to all this?
Augie doesn't ask questions. He starts discussions.
That's right. So, okay.
No, that's a great question, though. I met Anne through, you know, all the people in the, in the New York City beer world I kind of met through this, you know, the crucible of beer, right? The ecosystem of beer. But I, you know, at my core, I've always been a beer guy, right? So I've worked at breweries. My first job was in sales and marketing at Magic Hat in my hometown of South Burlington,
Vermont.
First
job out of school.
Out of school.
Because that's not
school.
Like 15-year-old washing dishes.
Right,
first job.
Right, right. My first job was at Denny's washing dishes.
Yeah, it's so the right first job for everybody.
That's exactly correct. That's exactly what my son will be doing as well. But so my first job out of undergrad was out of UVM was going to work for Magic Hat for a couple of years. And this is just before they got bought out by North American breweries. And so I kind of got my feet wet really quickly with the beer world, with the sales world, specifically doing a lot of travel across the country and regionally in New England specifically. And then from there, I was always interested in beer growing up in Vermont. It is kind of easy to say this, but you do kind of have like an innate appreciation for kind of the local environment and like what's going on around you, specifically in the beer world. And so that was really kind of cool. And then from there, moved down to DC, where I started working in this kind of digital side, right? I started working at different startups. I worked at Living Social, which is this crazy startup that took over the world for a couple of years down there. And then from there, actually kind of moved into contracting with a couple of like big PR firms and consulting firms in DC, kind of developing this digital side. And then in 2013, I realized that I was actually pretty good at writing, you know, and I really liked having an output for my thoughts. So I started The Brew Enthusiast. People picked up on that a little bit. I got a chance to start writing for different publications, which has unfortunately kind of gone by the wayside a little bit, but I'll still put out a piece once in a while when I feel like I've got something.
Justin's picking up your work.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
No, I'm lazy as hell.
I'm winking at Justin. I'm just winking at Justin.
Justin as a leader of beer.
Hey, Justin, remember yeah, exactly. all that work can't you see picked the winks. Up with Chang? That was me.
Right, exactly. Thank you, by the way. But yeah, and then from there, in 2015, I actually got sent on a trip by Guinness over to Ireland for a week. Which
as a Guinness employee?
No, as a freelancer, as a writer, and as a consultant working in my own business for The Brew Enthusiast, which is a business and a blog. And I went with Josh Bernstein and a bunch of the writers and Chris O'Leary and our wrecking crew here in New York City.
Yeah.
And had the best time ever, and then came back and quickly got into discussions with Guinness about this new educational program they were trying to put into place.
Now, we lost, I'm going to forget her name, but you're going to tell me. She was brewing highly at 6 points.
Heather
McReynolds.
We lost so female brewers, if you're a brewer, female brewers are hard to come by. Ones that make it up the ranks and do a good job at a serious place you respect are also hard to come by.
Indeed.
They're also very hard to get to move. And we lost one to Guinness sales and marketing. Was that your doing?
Wasn't my doing.
Are you the guy that sniped her out from under us
it's
all?
It's funny, actually. I met her at Strong Rope because we're still very involved in local beer and we're still very much in our hearts. We're still very much kind of the advocates for the local beer scene. And I met her at Strong Rope about 2 months after I had started, and she goes, oh, I'm starting this job. And I went, oh, interesting. I just started a new job. And she went, oh, it's at Guinness. And I went, oh.
Motherfucker.
Interesting. So that's how that worked. But no, we just kind of crossed paths there, and for the last 3 years we've been working together at Guinness. Yeah.
Right on. All right, so, and let's talk about this beer. Now, so somehow when the beer got in here with Chris, it went through your fridges. Do you know what you're drinking? Am I alone here?
Am I allowed to pretend that I don't? And then
no, you got it. Okay. It's going to be factual because people will know. People will know. They'll be like, there's no way she knew that it was the 2013.
Yeah, I know what we're drinking. Doesn't mean all right, I'm not
so
happy
I'm
about drinking it.
No, yeah, so I'm alone here. All right, so there was a phase on Steal This Beer where the Black Glass had something a little sour like this in it a lot. And there was some fruit I was calling like white strawberries. And it happened enough that I should have learned that when I smell that, it is always buh. You know what I mean? Like, I should have written down. And the worst part about this is the next note I have on this is it the aromas, not the palate, remind me of cinnamon bark. Right? So somewhere I've got a red fruit and a cinnamon bark on a pretty clean, pretty tight, pretty straightforward sour beer. And if we had a searchable database of words I've said on this show, I put those five in, it's going to put me right where I need to be, and I'm not nailing what it is. So I didn't learn enough, or I drank the knowledge away in the ensuing beer. Because a beer like this is almost always followed with Black Ops, and then I just forget everything that happened before.
Those were great descriptors, though. That worked out, yeah.
I think so, the cinnamon bark is spot on.
Right? It's
I mean,
weird,
I know
though,
the beer
because
is,
it doesn't taste anything like cinnamon.
Right,
I don't think cinnamon's been added, and it doesn't actually smell like cinnamon.
Well, to me, it's the bark part of
but
it.
You know what I mean?
Really
but it smells like cinnamon. But it smells like proper cinnamon bark.
But like
not
spicy wood bark. Do you know what I mean? Whether or not there's actual cinnamon, there's that woody,
spicy. And it could
spicy.
Just be it was in a barrel. Right?
There's a bit of inference here, too, though, because I've never thought that, and I've had this beer a couple of times. But now that you say that, right?
Like oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
I'm being affected a little bit.
That's the game. But anyway, so let's get back to what it is. It's got a neat sour to it where it's definitely either just lactic or seriously lactic enough that second or third sips go to a yogurty place that's kind of right where I like my kefirs to be, like that level of sour. It's neat. It feels cultured. It feels, like I said, clean, taut, goes right away when it should, just leaves the fact that you're drinking on your tongue. This is one of those beers Lauren would love. This is one of those cold fried chicken beers. This is
nice.
This is, this is picnic, you know, that romantic picnic you can only have with a bottle of wine, you could have with this bottle of beer. Cold fried chicken, little pate, crackers.
Is there vanilla?
Fruit. Not that I'm getting. If there is, it's the wood tannin I'm misrepresenting as cinnamon.
Hmm.
But I'm thinking this saw a barrel of some kind at some point, and that's what I'm getting as cinnamon / you're getting as vanilla. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's not a fun game when I'm alone, and Justin's very poorly hiding it, so I can see that it is a bottle at least. What the fuck is it?
It's from Schlafly.
Schlafly?
It's a sour blonde ale from the
Ibex Cellar.
Ibex Cellar.
What's that mean?
I don't know.
It's just the name of their series, so I think this did actually see some wood. This is a sour.
Ibex
is
like a
sour.
Big game antelope, right?
Yep, exactly. Yep, so. This particular beer has actually, both of these beers, as a fun fact, have been sitting.
Wait, don't. Oh. I still haven't tasted
it. No fun facts.
Nope.
You get no fun facts.
No, you can talk about this one, but the other one. I don't know what you mean by both.
But now he can't talk about this one, because whatever he's going to say about this one is the thought that follows both of these beers. So if next time I pick it up, I'm like, oh, this sat in the bottom of his closet in a Brooklyn apartment for 7.5 years.
He lives on the Upper West Side. So.
Now, nobody starts on the Upper West Side and stays there.
He's moving to Brooklyn.
Yep, see?
Yeah.
You can start there and leave, or start somewhere else and come. Nobody stays there forever.
We had someone from Schlafly on a recent episode.
Was I here?
You were. I don't remember either.
Yes. I'm going to visit them next month, actually. My cousin's getting married in St. Louis, so it's brewery time.
Cool.
Also.
How old is Schlafly now? Like 21, 22?
30, maybe?
I don't know.
They got to be.
Yeah.
Getting up there, right?
Yeah.
I know they're the guys that, when everybody says, oh, we took on the big guy. I know that they're the guys that took on the big guy.
Yeah, the St. Louis hometown.
The guys who
hometown
said,
crew.
Guys who said, no, this is a beer town, not your beer town. Anyway, well done. That's cool. Let's move back to... All right, so we've got to where you got there. I don't know if we learned anything about the brain process that takes you step A to B to C to D, but someday we'll identify, much like what kind of beer this is, what kind of type of brain that is. But let's get to this Guinness job. Guinness did something a couple months ago that was all the Facebook zeitgeist for a week. They've opened a big-ass brewery here somewhere in America.
Yep.
And are brewing Guinness and, well, you're the guy who sells Guinness for a living. Why don't you tell us what they do? But basically, they claim they're going to be doing more than pumping out small stouts, right?
Do you know where Guinness's first American brewery was located? Long Island City, Queens.
Really?
So back in the late 1940s, Guinness, in fact, if you go to around 43rd Street, you can see the warehouse and you can see the big toucan still faded on the side. It's kind of cool.
Huh.
But Guinness opened its first brewery. They bought it from the Burke Bottling Facility back in the late 1940s. Opened it in 1948 and closed it in 1954 due to a series of unfortunate incidents, which included particularly bad sales, which was a result of the great Prohibition and all that lovely stuff. But anyway, these days Guinness has just opened. Yeah, on August 3rd they just opened their brewery in Baltimore, just outside of Baltimore, Maryland, Hellthorpe, Maryland. And so they're not making any of the dark beer there, right? So all the famous imports that you've classically seen from Guinness, your Guinness draft stouts, foreign extra stout, Guinness extra stout.
Or as you like to call them, tap, bottle, and can.
Exactly, right? That is a famous way of describing those. Those are all being imported from Ireland, and then you've actually got Guinness Blonde, the production of Guinness Blonde being brought in-house to the new 100 Heck brew house that just got installed there, and now they're pumping out Guinness Blonde with a brand new recipe, and then they're doing a lot of just kind of fun innovation beers as well.
Can I ask a Guinness question that might sound really stupid?
Yep.
Everyone I've spoken to from Guinness swears that the Irish Guinness, the American version, like, should taste exactly the same. And I've been to Dublin.
We're getting deep here. This is the question.
It does.
And I'm going to answer that one for you, because I'm about to paint Guinness in a terrible light, but since I like taking both sides of an argument, I will take this side. One, freshness of keg matters for every beer you've ever had, and you know that better than anybody.
Yeah, but it's brewed in the U.S.
Not brewed in the U.S. It's all brewed in Dublin.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
All brewed in Dublin.
Two.
Has that always been the case?
For the last at least 20 years.
Two 25 serving
years. Guinness Draft Stout has always been brewed in
all
Dublin.
All the beers you've ever had.
Well, then that's the answer then.
Two.
Because I thought there was different Guinness.
But two versions. Is serving temperature. And this is one. So I'm about to get into a deep philosophical place where I force him to defend Guinness against what I think may be a major faux pas of Diageo. But not yet. But what I'm saying is this is one of the parts that's a byproduct where... One of the realities of craft brewers everywhere is you end up in a fridge Bud bought somebody. And one of the realities of Guinness is they end up in fridges Coors Light bought somebody. So the simple truth is, in every bar you've ever walked into, if you're going to be drinking Guinness, if it's St. Pat's and you're being ridiculous, order two pints, sip one. When you're done, start the next, and order behind that every time. So your Guinness is at 46 to 50 instead of 38, and immediately your Guinness gets better.
I didn't realize that there was all coming from Dublin. I really thought there was other in the United States.
The primary reason is freshness temperature. And if you treat it properly, you can get very close to a Guinness at a good, especially here, like New York City Irish bars that move Guinness.
Yep.
Even cold have better, right? It's tough when you're somewhere else. Like, you've had that dirty old tobacco water Guinness in an airport. It's because they shouldn't have Guinness in that airport. But because Guinness is Diageo, they do. But here's my thing. And this is... So, on the show, I've kind of philosophically been moving through my annoyance at the loss of pub. And I've been blaming the loss of pub on the loss of fun-to-drink little brown beers. Mm-hmm. And a revelation I recently had when I looked at taps in places that now have gone to American light lagers, locally produced hazy IPAs, and a Guinness tap, is that a big part of Guinness's success at whatever phase in their marketing push to become the branded tap with the branded fixture, with the we are the non-American light lager in every fridge in America push, mm-hmm. made the psyche of everybody, we don't need a little brown beer, we've got Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
And that lack of little brown beers, I think, is affecting folks. Then add to it that Diageo, managed to franchise an Irish pub anybody could buy and put in any town in the world, and you see the redundancy of the Guinness pub everywhere you go. These two things, I think, have hurt a business I wish mattered, and I'm wondering if this new spot is committed to the idea of bringing that back in and cannibalizing some of their own tap space to bring drinking brown beers back to the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you don't have to accept that my hypothesis is true. I haven't been on it long enough to defend it.
Sure.
But if I'm right, or even if it wasn't their doing, it's just the outcome is part of the mission of this new place. Mm-hmm. Hi, John Hall.
Oh, hey.
Part of...
Hi, guys.
Now it's 5 o'clock on Monday, y'all.
Yeah. I was just trying to tip the scales back a little bit. 2 weeks without you, I figured...
Two episodes. Yeah. It was one day, John.
Well, two weeks.
Look how glorious you made it. It was 2 hours of your life here without me.
Two
and you and I were texting the whole time, Augie, what should I ask now?
That's not...
They're like, holding hands at the table
No text can hold all those letters, John Hall.
They're just making eye contact.
No text can handle all those letters, John Hall. I can't ask you an Augie Carton question by text, John Hall. There's not enough letters in the world. Anyway,
so assume
what I'm saying is mm-hmm. at least where we stand, if yep. not the cause of it. How much of a mission is that for them? Because they're the guys who should make that move.
Sure. And what I'll do is I'll preface this response by saying most of this is now venturing into the realm of Chris McClellan's opinion, right? Versus
any
official.
That's
any
why
official
you're here.
Stance.
Yeah. That's why you're here. We hate official.
As somebody who is supposed to sort of be able to push the needle for Guinness, my job is to bring a new level of conversation to what's happening out there.
Right.
I very much lament the loss of the pub and the loss of exactly what you're talking about. I think that those community drinking spaces have caused a lot of. The fact that we don't go do that these days as a society means that, you know, we are so offended by everything and all the time.
That's work drinking,
right?
But you're not wrong. The beer is good.
But you know, like we don't take the time to go expose ourselves to these little brown beers and these little conversations, yeah. And because it's not consistently happening, right? We have a climate these days of people who get offended by everything all the time and who are not used to hearing disagreement or dissent, and so. This
clearly
is where
we don't listen to this show then, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the little niche we fill, John.
But this is why I listen to this show, you
Shut
know,
up,
and
Bobby,
I'm a huge
wrong.
Fan of this show for that exact reason. And so when you think about it from that perspective, I think that the world needs a little bit more of that. I think that we need to take the time to have this conversation much more often and to look each other in the eye and say, hey, what are your thoughts on this yeah. particular subject? But that being said, Guinness has always been that kind of standard, right? It's been the standard at the bar for the exact same reason that you're talking about.
And you know. I think that was genius, opportunistic, you know, baby boomers being terrible at truly thinking and just taking a cookie cutter, took a cookie
sure,
cutter
yep, yep.
stout to go next to their cookie cutter lager in their cookie cutter pub. And whether they created it or not, Guinness benefited from it, put a stranglehold on it, and established it as, I honestly believe... When I'm done thinking these thoughts through, I'll blame Guinness more than Bud for the loss of the pub. Go on. But it is the Chris
We have microphones.
Show.
You can just jump in.
Seriously,
I love that you're being polite, but
you've been a guest on this show. I'll interrupt you.
And I have 45 minutes of response, so you can go ahead.
I'm only curious to know if Guinness hadn't stepped in and taken that role, wouldn't someone else have?
Yeah.
I mean, at what
point
do you
say... Yeah, but it would
just
be another Bud label. And they tried along the way, right? They did the Michelob Darks, and they did shit like that. And they could never knock Guinness out of what Guinness did. So the thing is, I'm not sure they caused it. But I don't know another company in the world that will build you an out-of-the-box prefab Irish pub in any town on the African continent the same way they will in Hoboken, like Guinness will.
Sure.
They literally have... Not a Tide House, but a manufactured pub you can buy out of a catalog.
What about the Belgian beer bars that are popping up all over?
But are they so? Is that Chimay's business?
No, that's AB.
Yeah.
But that's also not Guinness's business, right? So Guinness, right. The, what you're talking to is the result of a number of cultural factors, but it's certainly not the result of any specific deliberate move by
right.
Guinness, right? So it's not that Guinness is going around popping up Irish pubs saying, look, here's a prefab Irish pub, have a good day.
But what I'm
right.
saying is if Guinness benefits from it, whether they caused it or not,
right.
does it behoove them to encourage other small beers because the first line that cannibalizes is a Guinness line?
Right. And
right? You understand what I'm saying?
I do, yep.
And is it, you know what I'm saying, is
yep.
it is that a possible intention if it isn't?
I think you're looking at it from sort of one side of that argument to say that this is because that happened, this is the reason, right?
Right.
So you're looking at it saying because
yeah.
Guinness existed, this is what's going on. But from where I'm sitting and just the history that we've looked into, especially with the Guinness Brewery, is, you know, Guinness kind of built its entire brand on quality, right? So they were making a better beer than everybody else for 150 years, right? Which is why they expanded across the globe so quickly, right?
They are the only mega beer in the world that gets an Augie Carton pass.
Yeah.
When people ask, like,
Ooh.
When I get those...
Really?
When I get those... what do you drink when you're drinking in a pub? Right. That, I'm like, Guinness.
Yeah.
It's Guinness or gin.
Right.
Like, if I look at Coors Light, Miller Lite, Bud, not craft beer. If it's Guinness, I'll do the double Guinness thing. And if it's not. And Guinness, if you drink the way I drink, it's a good beer to drink that way, right? It's small. You can pound them all night and not get super duper wasted.
Yeah, what is it, 4.5?
It's 4.2. But the thing, to your main point there, your main drive there in that point, right. It's a good point to bring up, right? Because at the end of the day, the reason I work for Guinness is because I really do believe in the quality of the product and I believe in their history, right? And I love that they give me a paycheck, right? But more importantly is...
Well, you have to have some sort of respect for the place
you
that
do.
You work. I mean,
you
no
do,
matter...
Yeah.
But check. No? You don't think
more,
so?
More importantly to that, though, more importantly to that is honestly the idea that whether or not you choose to capitalize on a market opportunity, right, whether or not you choose to look at it from that perspective, Guinness was always in a place where they chose to make business decisions, and I can you know recite the entire history of it, right? But they chose to make business decisions based on fundamental understanding and respect for the beer, right, and the people and the communities. And so all of the fact that New York City is like a hilarious bubble for that because it's so popular in New York City, you know, specifically, it's such a mainstay in New York, you know, and the places that pour a great pint of Guinness really hang their hat on that, you know. It's incredibly important to
Tracks
them.
Tracks and Penn Station,
right?
But one of our but
they pour an epically good pint
but
of Guinness.
But one of
by
our
way.
Most important yeah. little bars before New York started its boom was Swift's, right?
Sure.
Swift's
yeah.
was an early adopter of craft.
Swift was on Jimmy Carbone last week with us. So okay. Anthony
but,
Malone, we talked about this last
but
week.
But Anthony, Anthony has probably done more to message small breweries than a lot of people, saving people like Jimmy, who were that first, you know, proudest wave. But Anthony also, poor, he keeps his Guinness in a different fridge. We were talking about that.
Yeah.
Keeps his Guinness in a different fridge.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, some would say maybe some things are being improperly stored just so the Guinness is properly stored.
Right.
But he's committed to the fact that, and on St. Patrick's Day, when I'm drunk and nostalgic, I'll walk into Swift's at 2:30 on the way home. There's a proper crack band going on in the corner.
AM or PM?
Sure.
Okay.
They've done such a good job of creating that pub environment, and more specifically, I'll steal Anthony's line from last week, which is so good, is that you go in
if
and
you're
you
have not a, doing it with the accent, just leave it there.
You have a pint of, I'm going to do my best here. You have a pint of Guinness there, but you're having something from a time and a place, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about drinking a pint of Guinness at Swift is they care so ferociously about the quality of the beer that it shows, you know? That is a righteous pint of Guinness, and they know it, you know, yeah. and they lean into it. They won't say it out loud. I've tried to get him on the record 100 times to say it out loud.
He's too smart for
He'll
that.
Never
Only
tell me that.
Only a fool like Augie
He'll
Carton
never
says that shit on
tell
Mike.
Me that, yeah.
But, all right, so let's talk about beer two, which John now has.
Wait, real quick, I looked up beer one. It's kettle sour, but with oak chips.
Okay,
so
there
that's
you go.
Where all
that's
of the vanilla
that's
and the
perfect.
Bark came from.
There you go. Perfect. So it's a lactic pitch.
And forget what I said about the other beer when you're trying this beer.
Yeah.
These have nothing to do with each
here's
other.
Here's the problem, son of a bitch bastard. So here's the thing. I've got some spirit barrel to it, and I think it's just a simple spirit, like maybe even Jack Daniels or Jim Beam or one of the really clean, really simple. It's not really up front. It's not giant. It's just there in spiritus. Why are you laughing, fuckface?
Yeah, why are you laughing?
The spiritus pun?
No.
But... And then the problem is I've got something else like coffee deep hidden in the background, but everything is light and quick and fat, so I'm having trouble nailing down what it is I think I'm getting.
I'm getting like the syrupy coffee candy thing.
Okay, I'm fine with that, but it feels thin to me.
No, the body is definitely thin. It's
and I feel like it's
stouter, porterish kind of thing, but it maybe it has some age on it as well. Like it's almost like...
There was a hand tip here that I suspect is this has been in my house a long time. He said both of these beers, and I said stop there. But now it's in my head that this might be a well-aged Black Ops as a joke, because I called it out early. But
oh, is that?
It doesn't have the body. It's not big.
No, I think that this is something that maybe had a medium strength, but with some interesting characteristic that has faded over time a little bit. Like I'm saying, like that syrupy coffee candy thing, like almost like getting to Quick Check at 2:30 in the afternoon. Where you're getting the dregs at the bottom of one of the flavored pots kind of thing. I'm not saying it's hazelnut
there's
or something like that.
There's an anecdote here that you can tell us later
sure.
about.
Sure, yeah, no, exactly. As long as it's still got caffeine in it, I'll drink it, though.
Did I just black out?
Yeah.
You two just had a conversation.
We just had a whole conversation.
I missed
John
the entire
Hall screaming at a quick check. Where's the rest of the hazelnut?
Yeah, exactly. I want the old stuff.
At 2:30.
I don't want this fresh stuff.
It's just mainline it into me.
This tastes like hazelnuts, not for Angelica.
So I don't know where I'm drinking this. This is probably like one of those things that I'd pull out of the back of the fridge just to see what it's doing. Oh, yeah. That was nice. And then
I'm drunk
what
when
else
this
is
comes
in
out.
There? Yeah.
I'm drunk when this comes out.
No, it's a good bet anyway.
Does a show with a brewer drinking and gets mad that the brewer drinks. Weird guy. Anyway. All right, so let's flesh this out. I'll sip on it for a little longer and then I'll write my sentence. But in the meantime, Anne's on the show. It's nice to have Anne. Anne is positioning herself as a more and more better informed Cicerone. And you have on your resume that you're a Cicerone of some level.
Indeed.
Not super duper deluxe, mea meas Cicerone, but somewhere in the like purple belt level.
Yeah, so third level, advanced Cicerone.
Okay, and then there's a fourth level too, right? There's the online level, there's the I paid the money level, there's the I did some reading level, and then there's the I did some tasting level.
Yeah, so I did some reading. Okay. I did some reading, yeah. So we're at the I did some reading level, and we're not at the master yet, yeah.
And where are you at?
I took the master, and you know what? I knew every answer. Okay.
And passed?
Did you pass?
No, but I passed all my orals with flying colors, so I'm going to leave it right there. I'll take the master again at some point.
Okay, I'm going to want to flesh that out. But so I think the most fun part in the middle here was Anne doing that. So when I was a young bartender in Jersey City paying my way through college, I would hear from every motherfucker that sat down that I poured a Guinness for about how I had to get to Ireland and have a pint of Guinness. And that all came true when I finally made it over. But each one of them had some story about the Guinness being better in Ireland. And that just happened with two pros that know what they're doing. So I want to hear from the two of you what your favorite... You know, people think this and this is the truth story that you've come across as a writer / Guinness salesman, and you've come across as a publican here in the city that never sleeps with your Cicerone learning. And if you don't have one, it's fine. I liked when that came up.
Ray Daniels dies a little bit inside every time you do that.
I purposely kill it's Ray like, Daniels a little bit inside
he's
every
such
time.
Such a nice guy.
For
though.
Picking an
so
Italian
nice
word
show.
And giving it no Italian.
Just going to put everyone on
he's
a knife edge
like a guy
here
from Texas who lives in you know. Chicago
he
now.
He
might
what as well have named it the mozzarella certification.
Mozzarella?
No. It's a beautiful language. Just
can
say
you tell
ever
us from
later.
Jersey at the table?
So I think that there's probably... Well, we can table the Guinness, the idea of Guinness for a second because I think...
That's what I'm saying. I just want beer shit that's come up where you've been like, no, that's not the case.
Right. So I think in many of the cases, the... You know, we talked about this last week a little bit too, but it just does pay to bring
Wait,
up.
Last week on
yeah, you keep
Justin's
referencing
other
this
show.
Other show.
Sorry,
right, yeah.
Were you on it?
Because
no.
There's a lot of Guinness discussed last
was
week.
Was Becerra on it? Because I was.
Were you there?
Yeah.
All right. No, sir.
I'm just referencing.
All right, so hold on a second. Justin, in the newsletter, you
Justin
need to make
can't
sure
hear
that you,
you. He's not
reference the show so that people know
he's not on cans. It's,
what Chris
it's,
is talking about. It's fine. Go ahead.
Justin's looking at pictures of his daughter.
Justin writes a newsletter?
I'm delegating it to Justin now.
Oh, Jesus, that was short-lived.
Like the hard part.
Did you do two?
Yeah.
That's amazing. You're worse than me.
Yeah.
Go on.
But I think that there's probably a lot of there's a lot of stuff going on in the beer world these days. We know this. Yep. Hard to keep up.
Yeah,
right?
it's like the whole world these days. Oh, wait, that mattered yesterday. I meant to get back to that. Fuck. What's today?
Now it's not relevant, and I can't make a pithy comment about it, right? Especially on the internet.
Right.
That'll never work.
So last week.
But one of the things I always think about, too, is the idea, and you mentioned it earlier, Augie, is the idea of just thinking about beer as a culinary product, right, as something that's fresh. I know I've heard Anne riff about this for years now, and I think it's really, really important to continue to talk about this. But when you look at beer as a product, right, when you look at it as a culinary product specifically and realize that it's so much better when it's fresh, right, or it's so much better when it's served correctly, or it's so much, I think that half the reason we're not recruiting as many new drinkers as we should, right, is because a lot of people, especially a lot of people who serve beer, not just on premise, not just at places like Treadwell Park, but, you know, it could be anywhere. You know, and I think they don't think about beer in that way, and so it's just kind of still a second thought in a lot of ways, and I think that's honestly the lowest hanging fruit we have right now out there.
Can I speak to that for a second?
Yeah,
because
of course.
That's how I got into doing so much media stuff and getting out there is because I was bartending and I had to do hard sells on people to try new things, and I figured if they came in asking for it, how much easier would my job be, right? And so, on just this past Friday, today's Monday, I was on Rachel Ray a second time, and the first time I went in there, she had, I hate beer, I didn't grow up with it, I don't like it, da, da. And I had to convince her to try it, and now I'm back on, she's like, I love all these, I brought Rausch beer on and Doppelbock and
opened
things
her
like
eyes,
that.
Right?
Awesome. Well, yeah. It's not just about her, it's about the idea that people just don't know it exists, and if you're, you know, if you're not actively seeking this out, the only thing you're going to see are advertisements that are generally unfriendly or kind of, you know, whatever, for something that's not the best product. And that's pretty much it. Or you go into a restaurant or a bar where people can make you feel a little bit, you know, off for not knowing their vocabulary. Or
you say it's
too intimidating.
It's overwhelming. It's marginalized.
Yeah,
it's not for me.
You know, they don't look at me. They look at me like I have four heads. And I think just showing, yo, these exist in a very, very easy to understand way. They're fabulous. They can you can speak to them in wine language or cocktail language or food language, and all of a sudden it's like this whole new thing that world that opens up. Mm-hmm. And so I think reaching new audiences, especially for me, and you know having to work in a bunch of different neighborhoods and seeing the whole unique style of people coming in that don't know anything about beer.
But this is why we have so many fights. There's the big beer versus small beer. There's so many versions of this fight, and it's because there isn't an infinite number of beer drinkers out there. There's not an infinite number of people coming into Carton Brewing. Saying, you know what?
I'm trying to make it smaller.
I heard about this, and
just keep being you.
I should come
and
drink
it's
your
working
beer.
Well. It's working well
every day.
But this is the big problem: is that because of that, because you're all fighting for that, right? It becomes, and it's a tough nut to crack into. Yeah. It really is. You know,
well, that's what I feel. Like, why are we all fighting for scraps when there's like tons of people out there that have never even tried an IPA?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
The problem is, now we got to get Ann back on the show as a guest, because we'll talk about this, and I just don't want to, we've run, this show still needs a letter, and we still need to write a sentence for this beer. But now you've gotten into, because beer is pedestrian, and because it is, for so long, was kept at the stepping stone to grown-up thoughts idea. I feel like a lot of who's in our way are people who claim an understanding of beer at Facebook level, at Beer Advocate level, at TGI Fridays server level, at I once had a whale at a trade level. You know what I mean? And
I go to a beer festival every weekend.
Right. I've made a pretzel necklace twice.
But what kind of
beer festival? And instead of, people can claim that as wisdom and nobody second guesses them, right? If somebody walks into a room and says, I'm a Somm, most wine people will be like, certified Somm, worked in a restaurant as a Somm.
Most people in your world would say that. Most people would really say, what's a Somm?
Well, you know what I mean? What I mean is in beer, when you're like, I'm a big beer guy.
Yeah.
That can mean I have worn a Coors Light 12-pack on my head during a game of quarters. As much as it can mean.
I'm pretty sure that's called the Cass.
I didn't say joint once.
I actually think it's less that, though, because I think
but
the
what
guy,
I'm saying is when that's your level of I can officially talk on this topic, those people are as much a problem as what you're talking about, bad beer, right? Because people get put off by that asshole because he only knows a couple of abbreviations he learned on the web.
Right. He saw IBU.
New
he
phone, what am I doing?
You know.
What are you showing me?
I'm subtly trying to pass you notes, but that's not
subtle. He keeps mashing his hand against the phone. Anyway, so we will talk about that, and we will do that. But in the meantime, so here's the thing. I'm landing on this beer as I would have opened it drunk. I would have said, I got this, and I would have moved on. And I want to say that there's potential in the subtlety, and maybe if I drank it, gave it a proper due, drank a 750 over four glasses, would reveal things and I'd get excited. But that didn't happen, and since I know I would open it drunk, it probably wouldn't happen then either. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So we'll see what it is.
Yeah, what is it?
Justin is the weirdest
kid
since we moved.
Here?
Justin just walked over with a bag of diacetyl and put it on the table we're tasting at.
Some popped corn.
Like actual diacetyl.
Actual diacetyl.
Do you guys pour diacetyl on that?
No, everybody does. The flavoring in popcorn butter is diacetyl.
Yep.
All right, give me his lager since he's obviously not taking it seriously. And reveal what the beer was.
Yeah, what are we drinking?
So this was very insightful, by the way. So these were both beers that I've been seeing. Hey, what are these going to taste like 1 year from now, beers?
Ooh.
So this is 1 year old. One of my favorite beers from Allagash, their annual release of James Bean. So
it's coffee, which we were getting subtly. And is it
an ale aged in bourbon barrels and with cold brew coffee.
Yep.
All right. So yeah.
All right. I'll stand by what I said.
I tasted everything in there and did what I did, and yeah, this would come out drunk.
Yep. Yeah, vanilla, the flavored. Yeah.
So when this is fresh, I can, now that I've had, because I'm tasting this with you for the first time, it's confidently, I can tell you, it's about 10 times better.
Oh yeah.
When I first get it.
The place where we used to do this show, Barcade, has a couple of kegs of this and would tap it
regularly.
Didn't
you do this show without me at Barcade last week?
Yeah.
What are you complaining
about? For two whole weeks, we just continuously broadcast without you. It was glorious, can I just tell you?
I imagine you ran out of things to talk about quickly.
No. Look at no. Cass, by the way, you're never going to listen to them anyway. You're like me.
But
Cass just jumped all over it. Cass just acted like he owned the place. He walked
right
in.
Yeah. Did you drone on?
Wearing just a bathrobe, nothing else, open at the waist. It was just, it was all a sight.
So here's my question. Are you reading the letter?
No, we're not doing a letter in this show.
Why not?
What's the letter? What's the letter?
We
the
do letter a letter of the day. Every show. Oh.
Next Where's show is a letter show. So
oh, the whole next show is a letter show.
Yeah.
All right.
We're going to get the band back together.
Well, if you can stick around for now, why don't you stay around? If you want to stay around, we'll do that.
I'm hanging.
But I'm going to lead that discussion. If it's informal, I just got back from Sweden, and I've got like 900 fucking things to talk about drinking.
Oh, great.
So we'll read letters, and I'll pretend I'm paying attention, and then we'll talk about Sweden.
Okay.
So, guys, come back for Chris and Ann Part 2. Yeah. Paul will be here.
I am.
We might even let Justin read a letter or two.
That'd be fun.
And in the meantime, so we often talk about the Patreon, and we don't do it enough showing how bad we are at that shit. But I went over it with somebody the other day, and I was like, if we don't accept ads, why the fuck do we care? Why does everybody keep telling me we care about Apple five-star ratings?
John, you're bankrolling this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
This is you.
Secretly, he tells everybody it's me, but nobody knows.
I know he is.
Nobody knows. John is the
I can't pay attention to you right now, Chris, because I have no idea what Augie's about to say, and he's just about to fuck the whole thing
up.
So here we go.
So I was talking, I was like, why the fuck do we care about five-star ratings and reviews on iTunes if we're not looking for advertiser dollars, which are based on all that? And what was pointed out to me was, you'd say on the show all the time, dude, $2, what you would tip a bartender to our Patreon if all of the 20,000 subscribers put it, you'd be well-funded, you could fly all over the world, Cass could afford gas money.
Yeah.
Well, the more that happens, the more people hear it. The more people hear it, the more likely they are to Patreon it, the more likely you are to stay independent. So now that that's been explained to me and the more it makes sense, now I really do want you guys to please go on iTunes.
Give us
a good
review.
Yeah. Give an honest review. Give 5 stars if you think that's right, or even if you don't, do it and fuck off. But I'm told that that will generate
more first-time
listens.
Give us your money first.
If you don't want everybody that's ever put Beer Podcast into iTunes hear me tell them to fuck off for not giving us $2, then you're doing the wrong thing by not giving us 5 stars.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's that. And can you just tilt this way? Cass, if they want to talk to us, what's how?
You can reach us at stealthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com, @stealthisbeer on the gram, Untapped, Twitter, and obviously we're on the Facce Libro.
Facce Libro.
Facebook for those that speak Augie. and we're now on Spotify, too. So
well, that's
on iTunes. So, yeah, find us on Spotify.
Fancy, guys.
That's literally the only thing Justin has ever done for the podcast.
But
over
way to
two
go,
years.
Justin.
So he nailed it.
I love that you asked Cass to do it just as he took a big mouthful of popcorn.
Cass, I like the sexy voice you put on, too, there. That was
Cass,
nice.
Cass.
I
do the
plug-in.
Cass is our boy. Cass is our boy. Anyway, look, y'all, thanks. We're going to do a letter show next, so
It'll
listen to that and get at us.